welcome to Aerial Helwanis MMA Show!
Post-show time on this Monday, December 10th, 2018. Much like last week, my friends, we have a lot to discuss. We don't have any time to waste. A happy 7-year anniversary to John Jones, who on this day, back in 2011, submitted Lyoto Machida in Toronto at UFC 140 with that standing guillotine, and then he just dropped him and walked off. It was amazing. That happened 7 years ago today. How crazy is that? And kind of funny, we just came back from Toronto. What a trip it was. Holy smokes. Like I said, we have a lot to discuss. Let's not waste any time about Crust First and Fastest Growing. You know all that by now. You're all on board. You're all on the bandwagon, so to speak. New York Rick in the house, who Hello. I do believe is on his way to Kansas City.
I am on my way to Kansas City.
It is. You know, I guess that. But there's not many options when dealing
with
the
last event was in Oklahoma.
Okay, Oklahoma, Kansas City.
But I will be in Kansas City for the event on Saturday. Yes.
Okay. Perhaps we'll squeeze in some Invicta talk later on. But we have a lot to discuss. First off, an interesting day on the program. And we're coming off a UFC featherweight title fight. We're coming off a women's flyweight title fight. And I feel like we hardly talked about those divisions because it was the welterweights that stole the show.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Specifically, I think Kamaru Usman at the very end.
Ended it. Exclamation point.
Yeah, he brought the heat to Ben Askren most distinctly.
So for those who do go Crust First, I'm actually not going to recap the whole thing for you. I want you to know that you need to go watch it and figure it out for yourself because Woodley, Askren, Usman were all great. I want to know what you think about the whole situation. Now that you've heard from the three major players, and of course there's still Colby Covington to hear from, but I feel like Colby, we know Colby's ready at this point.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of what direction they go. It gives me a headache the whole thing because I don't think we should be in this position, but I've made my side known. I want to know from you and then I'll react.
I am not interested in any interim titles. I'll say that right off the bat.
Yes.
I am not interested in that.
Yes.
I think Kamaru Usman deserves the opportunity out of everybody in the pool, everybody that we are, you know, drawing from in
more
the top
than Colby?
Of the world. Yeah, in my opinion.
What?
I think Kamaru Usman deserves it more.
Okay.
I think the interim title that Colby held gives him a little bit of a leg up in that discussion. So I would be okay with that fight. And in fact, I think that's the fight I'd like to see. I'd like to see Woodley and Covington finally dispatch that.
Yes.
Kamaru Usman, I'm okay.
I tell you now, I want to see Usman versus Askren after today.
I want to see that, but it's a risky fight for Kamaru.
He doesn't have to do it.
He does not
have to
do it.
He's a number one contender. He's done enough. He's won 9 in a row. He just beat RDA. He doesn't have to do it.
He was also the backup. There's not really anything left for Kamaru to prove. But boy, would I like to see Kamaru and Ben Askren.
I'd like to see Kamaru versus Covington. I'd like to see Kamaru versus Woodley. You remember that press conference in Brooklyn where Kamaru Usman and Covington were going back and forth? They stole the show. They weren't fighting. I feel like at some point we just need to get some kind of resolution to all these. Like, all these guys need to fight because they've all done a phenomenal job of arguing with each other and going back and forth and press conference. But they don't fight. So I want to see them fight. That being said, I just want to reiterate – the fact that the UFC doesn't have a main event for January 26th is not Woodley's fault.
No.
And the fact that they're pushing him just because they have nothing else, to me, is just it's a completely unfair situation for Woodley to be in, especially considering he just fought in September.
Yes. But we've seen things like this and creating interim titles for this exact purpose to kind of push the divisions along.
You just stripped the guy of the interim belt. You just stripped him.
It was meaningless when it was made, and it was just as meaningless on the way out, and it can be easily done again.
This will be, you know, this will be peak interim title if they just.
I think it already peaked.
This is on a whole other level. Strip a guy and then institute a new one?
Colby getting stripped was already peak interim title.
Colby fighting for the interim belt.
Yeah,
was peak.
The whole thing.
Then it was.
The whole thing.
I don't
but
know
those,
how.
Those are the fights I want to see, regardless of interim titles, non-interim titles. I want to see Kamaru Usman versus Ben Askren. I want to see Tyron Woodley versus Colby Covington. But I'd be okay with any combination of those fighters in the mix. The only one I think we wouldn't get, obviously, is Ben Askren versus Tyron Woodley, although Woodley wasn't committing to not making that fight when you asked him about it on the show.
I just don't know how Tyron Woodley is remaining sane.
Yes.
Like, he took this fight on short notice against Darren Till. He did what they asked. Can you just wait a second and let him get clear? The guy had surgery, legit surgery. He sent me photos. I wish he'd post them of his hand, how it looked after surgery.
And he made a great point that there have been fighters who are out much longer than this
yes.
without the pressure being applied. I think he's done enough to earn that respect.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just wait. Now, okay, I understand that I don't have to answer to ticket buyers and pay-per-view providers,
sure.
et cetera. So it's easy for me to say, I recognize that. It's easy
yeah.
for me to say, like, hey, it's not their fault. They shouldn't be rushed into it. What do you do with that card? If Woodley cannot fight, I don't think, as much as I love them,
yeah.
I don't think Kamaru Usman versus Ben Askren, I don't think Colby would be dumb at this point to take a non-title fight.
Correct.
I don't think any one of those guys are big enough to headline. Like, I don't think the fight, I don't think the stakes, especially given what the interim title means that they would be bringing in, I don't think it's big enough to headline a pay-per-view.
I agree with you on that.
So what do? Especially when Bellator is in the same market on that same night on free television, right? Like, literally, what, 10 miles away?
Yeah.
How do you... It's amazing how this is shades of... Remember 2 years ago when they had the same show on the same weekend in January, Anaheim, Inglewood?
Yeah.
It's crazy how it's all turning out to be the same. What I would do is stack Brooklyn. Take Ben
Eliminate
Askren to Brooklyn.
Event.
Yes. Take Ben Askren to Brooklyn at this point. Look, we'll go through it very quickly. Daniel Cormier is the heavyweight and light heavyweight champion. He's unavailable, right? He just fought.
Yep.
And he's a little banged up. Whitaker's fighting in February.
Yep.
Welterweight is welterweight. Khabib is still on the sidelines, and now he just got a continuance.
Yep.
So his hearing, the next chance for it is January 26th. Max just fought.
Yep.
Dowdy's coming back that soon. You never know.
Yep.
So, okay, fine.
Don't know.
135 and 125 are fighting in Brooklyn.
Yep.
Females, 145 and 135 are fighting December 29th. Could she turn around that quickly? Yeah, but at that point, we're talking less than a month to promote.
Yep.
125 just won. I doubt she's turning around. And Rose is injured. Who are you getting? So now we've come to two conclusions. You hope and pray that Woodley
is healthy.
Yeah. Or Max Holloway. You try to entice him.
Or the best of the best non-title fight that you could possibly put on.
Which is?
I mean, it's not Conor, obviously, because he's dealing with the same issue that Khabib is dealing with.
Yeah. There isn't one.
Do you get Diaz to come to the table? I don't know what the answer is. I don't have an answer. Correct me if I'm wrong. The last time an event was pulled was also Anaheim. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah, man.
That's a tough thing to do
for that market
twice in a row.
Yeah. But they've been to Anaheim since. They gave them DC Jones, too. So it's not like they
gave
them
scraps. Yes, but they also canceled an event.
Yeah.
I mean, you've laid it out well. There isn't really a good answer for this. I don't know what you do if you've removed the one fight that people were really, you know, going to come for and now moved it to Brooklyn.
So, obviously, Brooklyn's gain is Anaheim's loss.
Yep.
And as far as I'm concerned, bigger picture, this was the right call.
Sure, kicking off.
Cejudo Dillashaw is perfect for the ESPN Plus debut.
Yep.
It's a title fight. It's a special title
yep.
fight. It's a champion versus champion fight. It's a hardcore fans fight. So,
yep.
you know, now you want the hardcores to sign up for ESPN Plus. Like, it makes all the sense of the world. It's the fight, in my opinion, that should have headlined this show from the beginning. You couldn't start the ESPN era with a non-title fight like Paulo Costa versus Yoel Romero. Great fight.
Fantastic
Love those two
fight.
Guys. That's not a headline for Brooklyn.
No.
That's not an ESPN debut headliner, especially when you started the Fox relationship with the heavyweight title fight. So I like this fight. It is kind of funny that both guys have ties to Southern California and they're being moved from Southern California to Brooklyn. Yeah, it did. But this is what happens when you put on too many title fights.
Yes.
You're doing four title fights in December alone. If you would have done one in each card, you would have had one for Anaheim and one for Brooklyn. You would have been fine. You can't keep doing this. And this happens every time.
It becomes difficult, though, because if somebody – you can – you know, the best laid plans, you start planning for one a month, but then let's say that title fight that you had gets scrapped for some reason. One of the competitors gets injured. Now you put it onto another card, and then it continues to snowball.
Okay, so now let's talk about Brooklyn here for a second. So that was the right fight. We talked about this, right?
Certainly.
Cejudo Dillashaw. Last week, massive news. Greg Hardy put on the card. He's going to be fighting Alan Crowder. He was supposed to fight on December, I think it's 27th or 8th, in Pensacola for Island Fights. They pulled him from that card, and now they've started the clock on his UFC career because he was fighting with a developmental deal.
Yeah.
But now he's going to be making his UFC debut on the January 19th card. And so I have a few things that I wanted to say about this because it's been a big story. I find it to be a questionable move, and stay with me here, ESPN debut to put Greg Hardy on the ESPN debut, in my opinion, is a questionable move. This is the beginning of what everyone involved, I would imagine, is hoping will be a long venture together, right? A long partnership, if you will. This is ESPN's foray into the world of mixed martial arts, Disney's foray into the world of mixed martial arts. To kick things off with a controversial figure like Greg Hardy, and controversial is probably putting it mildly.
Yeah, absolutely.
A guy who was banished from the world of the NFL, who then came over to mixed martial arts, and that was met with a lot of criticism and cynicism. Very polarizing figure, and again, that's putting it mildly. To kick things off with a somewhat controversial sport, I guess you can say, to me, is a very questionable move. It didn't need to happen. At this point, I don't think we should or need to debate Greg Hardy's place in MMA. It's an old story. He's done it. He's dedicated his life to it. By all accounts, he's a good teammate. He shows up. He's respectful. He's living at the dorms. Like, at this point, it's a thing. It's happening. And the UFC is in the Greg Hardy business. So I don't think it has anything to do with that. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the decision to put him on the ESPN debut.
Yeah.
And so if you would have told me, whenever the ESPN debut starts, the UFC wants to put Greg Hardy, of all people, who has never fought in the UFC, has only fought pro on the Contender Series, how do you feel about this? I would say, look, just wait. Do it when there's a little less of a spotlight, less attention. Just, you know, ease him into it. I wouldn't even say you're crazy if you put him in Belém, Brazil. Like, just try to go under the spotlight, because this is a guy with a very controversial past, and now he's doing cage fighting, and it's the ESPN debut and all that. So I feel like it's, again, the juice isn't worth the squeeze on this one. Like, just ease into it. So that's that. But when you couple it with the fact that Rachel Ostovich, who was involved in this alleged domestic violence situation, an ugly situation, is also on the ESPN debut in Brooklyn, fighting Paige VanZant. To me, this is incredibly tone deaf. And it's a very unfortunate decision. And if you consider Greg Hardy is someone who was accused, Rachel Ostovich is a victim, to put them together on the same card, even though they have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
But they have both been involved in a similar experience, but from very, very different perspectives. To me, it is putting Rachel Ostovich, regardless of what she may be saying, because she's put in a very tough spot. Media is reaching out there. Like, what is she going to say? No.
Yeah.
It's putting her in a very tough spot, an awkward spot. I do believe, to a degree, it's also putting Greg Hardy in a tough spot, because now he's having to answer. You're doing the opposite of what I just said you should be doing. Now you're magnifying it. You're
the
not
spotlight
flying him.
Is right on it.
Even bigger. I think it's putting ESPN in a tough spot. And I'm only speaking on my behalf here, because now the network is having to answer for it, when in reality, it's only the UFC who is making the decision. They have full booking control, right? And so to me, this is tone deaf. It's dubious at best. It's a move that didn't need to happen. It's a move that, you know, the debut for ESPN was going to be big regardless. I don't think Greg actually adds all that much to it. Put him on some other card. There's 13 straight weeks of cards. Why do you have to do it on that one? Especially when Rachel Ostovich is on the card. And so I know that Dana White said he spoke to Rachel Ostovich. He still hasn't answered the question if he spoke to her before or after booking. But she says that, you know, he's got his story. I've got mine. I reached out to her. She didn't want to speak at this time, and I totally understand. I reached out to Greg Hardy. Didn't want to speak at this time, and I totally understand. But to me, like, last week was a very big week for the UFC. Being in Toronto, sold out. Back in Canada, there was a lot to like. This overshadowed it. And I just felt like this was completely avoidable. This didn't need to happen. No one was clamoring to have Greg Hardy on the ESPN debut and Greg and Rachel, who had just experienced this alleged horrific incident, fighting on the same card an hour apart. It just doesn't need to happen. And and the word that continues to come to mind is tone deaf. How do you not realize that this was a mistake?
I have no answer for that. It is the clearest.
More of a rhetorical question.
Sure, it is the clearest mistake that there is. And your point about nobody clamoring for this is very evident by the fact that he was going to be fighting in December under, you know, quite frankly, like a shroud of anonymity. Like, yeah, that was not going to be, you know, this big spotlight. And now he is being thrown into that unnecessarily so.
I remember when I first reported about Greg Hardy trying MMA for the first time.
Yeah.
This is like 2.5 years ago. MMA fans don't really know who Greg Hardy is in the sense,
yeah,
that they're like, oh, this is a big NFL guy coming over. It's the general sports fan who knows Greg Hardy, who then hears about him doing MMA, and they're like, oh, God, that's a little uncomfortable. That's who you're appealing to in this.
Yeah.
And so I bet you the UFC thought, like, this is perfect for ESPN. But to me, this is a big deal for our sport, and for it to be overshadowed, like, we should only be talking about Cejudo Dillashaw.
Absolutely.
Fighting for the flyweight title. And Donald Cerrone fighting Alex Hernandez. And Joanne Calderwood fighting against Ariane Lipinski. Like, those are the fights that should be getting all of the attention. I can guarantee you that Greg Hardy is going to get just as much attention as the two guys fighting in the main event. And to me, that's a travesty.
Yeah, and I also think, even though Rachel Ostevich has said that she's okay with this, or as told to Dana White.
What's she going
to
say?
First of all, as you said, she's in a tough position there. Her entire paycheck is, I need to fight, so she's going to fight. But she's also made a declarative statement that she is fighting to show that there is more beyond, you know, domestic violence. And
which is great.
It is a positive message. This is now casting a negative light onto what was a story that could have been positive.
Beautiful.
And now
you have to tie them together.
They're inextricable at this point, and that's an unfortunate situation.
I could see a great story being told on that night or the night before about Rachel Ostevich,
yeah,
overcoming and truly being a role model. Like,
absolutely,
truly what she is doing and moving on with her life. How could you not commend her? But now you have to tell this part of the story with it as well. And she's right. One has nothing to do with the other. And that's why it's so unfortunate.
It is taking over that story.
Like, if you talk about Rachel Ostevich fighting on January 19th, you have to talk about Greg now.
Yeah.
Now they're linked.
It's unfortunate.
Why did it have to happen? Even if you do it the following week. And the following week, to me, honestly, is a little too close for comfort as well. Like, I even feel like that's too close. I would have done it in let him have his fight in December. Let's see how that goes. And then get in the business if you want to do it.
Yep.
Why did it have to be on that card? That's the part. And then, byproduct, Wednesday, there's this press conference, and this is the story of the day. And
yeah,
now it's in the Washington Post, and all these other outlets are talking about it. And apparently, UFC PR tells media there that they should only ask questions about 231. Now, I understand where they're coming from in this regard. There's fighters up there who are cutting weight, and it's somewhat disrespectful to talk about something else. So what I would have done if I was the UFC, look, this is breaking news. There's no way around it. Do the press conference. Tell the press, and I think there's nothing wrong with this, tell the press, hey, while we're up there, Dana White's up there, and Max and Brian, Joanna Valentina, please just ask them questions about their fight. After the press conference, immediately following, Dana White is going to be made available to talk about other things. And if you'd like to ask him other things, please save your questions for that. I think there's nothing wrong with that. They didn't do that. According to media there, they said, please only ask. And then Dana wasn't made available. He was made available the following day to partners, quote unquote.
Yeah.
That's a bad look.
Absolutely.
And then come Friday, he did a scrum once again with partners. But Mixed Martial Arts Journalists Association had a pool reporter there, Sean Alshadi. He was allowed to go and ask questions on behalf of the non-partners. And at that point, I think Dana was tired of talking about it and was basically fed up with the whole situation. And I don't think made a great account of himself with his demeanor and some of the things that he said. He was frustrated at that point because he had already discussed it on Thursday, but he discussed it to not the general media. That's something that should have been discussed to the general media, in my opinion. Get it over with once and then you're done. That didn't happen. And so the whole thing, in my opinion, just turned into a very unfortunate turn of events when all the attention should have been on 231.
Yeah, which ended up being a fantastic event, and everything driving into it could have been avoided. Do you think that if a question had been asked at the press conference, that we would not be in this situation?
Yes. Off the top, ask one of your buddies in the media, hey, you got anything? Ask a couple questions, ask one, a follow-up. And the thing, you know, is still going to be a story. Trust me, come that week in January, it's going to be a story.
It's unavoidable.
But it wouldn't have been the lingering story that it was all week. And I know, I went on my media tour, and everyone was asking me about it.
Yeah.
And how could they not? They're not doing their job. Like, we're talking about MMA. It's a big story in MMA. It's a big story in sports, especially with what's going on in the NFL with other players, right? Kareem Hunt and Reuben Foster. So how do you ignore this? Greg Hardy, I mean, like, come on. How do you ignore this? How did they not see this coming?
Yeah, that's the question, though. Do you think that they're unaware that the level of attention that they expect that Greg Hardy will draw from the casual sports fan is part and parcel with the negative attention that he will also get? I feel like it has to be a calculation.
The negative was going to come regardless. To me, you're only magnifying it by putting him on that card. And I'm not even talking about Rachel.
I mean, that's completely, yeah.
The debut alone. Yeah. Had you told me 4 months ago that he was planned to be on the debut, I'd have said that's a bad idea. And now, with what happened to Rachel, it's an even worse idea.
Yeah.
It's an even more tone-deaf decision. And so I saw a lot of people saying, like, oh, what's the MMAJ going to do about this? Like, and I feel one thing that I have to say, I'm very proud to be a part of the MMAJ. There is nothing that annoys me more than when other media members who have not signed up, who have shown no interest in signing up, come to us and ask us, what are we going to do?
Right.
You don't get to do that. This is not your thing. You have clearly told us that you don't want to be a part of this for whatever reason. Don't ask us what we're going to do. Ask yourself what you're going to do. We've got it. We're a unit. We're trying to make the media corps better in this sport. Why are you looking to us?
Or join and then be a part of that.
The other thing I hear is, I'm waiting and seeing what you guys are going to do.
Well,
that's the most selfish BS cop-out line I've ever heard. Because if you want it to be something, you join it. You sign up for it, and you make it into what you want it to be.
Well, if that's your point of view, if your point of view is something needs to be done, there's two ways to do it. Do it on your own, or do it as part of the MMAJA. Those are the only two options. If you're doing neither, then what are you asking the question for? You're not actually doing anything to help it yourself.
No, you're not.
So there's two options there.
But then you have people who are like, what are you guys going to do? What are you guys going to do? Like, what do you want?
Yeah.
We've got this. And by the way, the MMAJA isn't a news outlet. Like, we don't owe you public statements. Like, we're not a feed, right? Things that are happening internally are happening internally. And so let me just say this. It was a very weird week for MMA media.
Absolutely.
Because, and weird is putting it mildly. Then on Friday, this story comes out about a guy who wrote for Bloody Elbow at our former home, Vox Media, Ian Kidd. And he has been charged and accused with some heinous acts, like the vile, the most disgusting behavior possible. And I'm sure you sympathize as a parent or even not as a parent. It's just the lowest form of society.
Yeah.
This particular individual, a day prior, was like stepping to us about what we're doing, and is known in the Twitter sphere as someone who likes to uncover the truth, right?
Sure.
What an uncomfortable situation, right? Yeah. And so I just want to say that individual, not a part of the MMAJA.
Nope.
Don't know him, never met him. A lot of people were asking me my feelings, my thoughts. Never met him. Interacted a couple times on Twitter, but that's it. But we're not going to speak on that. He has nothing to do with us.
Right.
He's not a part of our association. So we can't police the entire, you know, MMA media corps. That's not our job. That's up to other people who employ him or work with him.
I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding of what the MMAJA is supposed to be doing. It is not to provide commentary on every single thing that happens in the media space. It is to protect and ensure the rights and privileges of the media members. And so these people that are on the outside of it have an opportunity to be protected under that and join, and choose not to for one reason or another. That's easy to understand. I think just something that's not being expressed clearly.
Thank you to Max Holloway and Valentina Shevchenko, who on Saturday night, after all of this, made us forget about what was a weird week, in the sport of MMA. For multiple reasons. What a performance from Max. What a victory. I think his best performance. I really do. More impressive than the Aldo fight, considering what he's been through, considering what he's overcome, considering how he started and kept going. The pace, the volume was incredible. You disagree. How?
I'll be honest.
Ortega undefeated.
I think too, it's easy to say in hindsight. It's very easy to say in hindsight. I will grant you that. I think too much was made of the struggles of Max Holloway.
What?
I think too much was made of, is he okay? Is he okay? Is he okay? I think the uncertainty, the secrecy, the mystery around the reasons why he was unfit to compete are one thing. But I do think that there was too much to be made about, is Max Holloway going to make weight? Is he doing this? Is he still healthy? Is he still comfortable? He looked as fine on the scale as he has in the past. I didn't see any difference now. I didn't think it was any tougher of a cut, at least, you know, what we see optically from him on the scale and throughout fight week. I think too much was made of that story, and I think the wins over Jose Aldo were more impressive, in my opinion.
Wow.
I give more credence to Jose Aldo. I also think, you know, Jose Aldo is a better fighter at that point that he beat him.
Fair.
Than Ortega is.
Can I just say, I'm so happy that Max, every time someone tries to do the whole "you're the greatest featherweight of all time" thing, is very quick to
flex it.
Yeah, because it's just ludicrous.
It's funny from Max because he is so, not, I don't want to say braggadocious because I don't think that's the right term for it, but he's confident. He's very confident in his abilities.
Yeah.
But he will always pay homage to the legends of the sport.
I love it.
It's not different than, you know, the best Hawaiian fighter. No, BJ Penn.
Yeah.
He will always defer. He will always do that while still simultaneously being very confident in his abilities. If he, you know, and he just beat Jose Aldo twice, let's call it what it is. But he will still call him the greatest. It's an interesting kind of thing.
He has
about
to
him.
Defend the title several more times, in my opinion, in order to be in that discussion.
I'm kind of there already.
He only did it twice.
The path that he had there was different than most, though.
Sure.
The number of victories he had to rack up in a row to get there was different than most.
That's fair. Took him a while to finally get that
shot. If he had that shot earlier and was able to capture it, it would have been different.
That's a good point. I didn't consider that, but that is a good point.
But I think it's debatable. I don't think it's a sure thing by any means. I'm ready to go there. Holding two wins over the guy that you're trying to unseat helps in that regard in a big way. I'm already there, but I understand why it'd be hard to give that up. I think there's a very good case to be made that Jose Aldo is still the guy.
Man. What a performance. I don't want to see him. So I would assume you don't want to see him move up to 155. If you think that all of this has been overblown.
Yeah.
Why are we talking? In one breath, we're saying greatest featherweight, and then
And we want to push him up already.
Yeah.
I have no urge to see Max Holloway leave 145.
Don't get me wrong. Him versus Tony Ferguson,
great
sign
fight.
Me up.
Love it.
Him versus Khabib,
love
sign
it.
Me up. But what about him versus the featherweights? What about him versus Zabit eventually? What about him versus Frankie Edgar?
What happens is people get impatient. They don't want to wait for Zabit. They don't want to wait for some
Zabit's
of these
not
other
that
contenders.
Far off, by the way.
That's true. But people don't want to wait for it to happen. Tony Ferguson, Khabib, those are finished products. They want to see that now. They want to see Max versus Tony, Max versus Khabib now, Max versus Connor. I want to see him stay at 145.
Okay, so
if he's not the best ever, let him establish himself there as the best ever. At featherweight, and then go up to 155.
So who would you book him against?
That's a tough question, but can I look at the... give me the top 10.
Frankie Edgar, do you buy what he's saying?
I would like to see... I mean, I'd be perfectly okay with Frankie Edgar. That fight was supposed to happen. I'm good with that.
Mendez Volkanovski winner?
I was also going to say Chad Mendez, but I don't want to forget anybody. I think Frankie's the one I would have been forgetting. I think Frankie is a great fight.
Frankie was on the show today, campaigning. What were you doing?
You know what?
What were you looking at? Were you on a conference call or something?
Nice try. I wasn't. I don't get invited. Frankie would have been the guy I would have been overlooking.
I wasn't even saying it for that reason, but that is funny. That is a good retort. No, there's Moicano.
Yeah, Mendez, Moicano. Volkanovski, if he's able to beat Mendez. I think now
it's really those guys.
None of those are the caliber of the fight that Tony Ferguson or Khabib is going to be. None of those are the quote unquote super fight, but those are viable contenders. And especially a guy like Mendez coming back and proving that he's still at the top of the game, I think can only help that case. As one of the bigger names that Jose Aldo was able to defeat, I think that would mean a lot.
Man, I'm just so relieved that Max is okay. I know you say that you weren't buying it. I was buying it. And I'm relieved, and I know he like stripped down his team. He didn't have he didn't even have a nutritionist with him on site. And so these things were making me nervous. He's as cool as can be, to your point. His son is the man. I'll never be as cool as that kid. And just the whole week of him embracing Toronto and showing up to every Raptors game, it felt like the Raptors were playing every night, and every night he was there. Although on Sunday, him not being courtside is just an absolute travesty.
Like, yeah, his seats weren't.
Yeah, very nice that you had him sitting close leading up to it to maybe promote the car. But now that he won, it's like, yeah, why don't you join us in section 300 over there? But he's a man of the people, so I'm sure he was totally cool with it. It was just, what a great story. Like, I really think he might be my comeback fighter of the year, just considering. It's amazing because you'll recall last year on the awards, I said that he was going to be my fighter of the year. Didn't turn out that way. Comeback fighter. Now, what about Valentina? Amazing win. Bring some sort of stability to 125. We going Jessica I versus Valentina? Is that the fight or you got something else?
That's the fight.
That's the fight. I feel like it's a no-brainer, really.
The other options are what? Sejara is going up.
Stars going up. Well, you got Joanne Calderwood fighting next month, and she would be then 3-0. So the same as Jessica.
I think it's Jessica I.
Yeah.
I think she's done enough. Nico Montano is out there.
I got to say, I like when she says, who's that? It's kind of fun. To me, more interesting is, what does Joanna do?
That is more interesting because
She's not going to get a title shot at 115 because Rose has the belt for now.
I think that's the thing, though.
She's 0-4 against Valentina, although most don't know about those three. But still, it's still worth noting. It's kind of hard to sell it at this point.
We're on hold on I think, on that question because Rose still has the belt. If Rose doesn't have the belt anymore, I think it's easy. You're back at 115. I think there's no doubt that's the more interesting weight class for Joanna. A tougher cut. It seems like she was happy at flyweight, and I thought she looked good. Make no mistake. What was it? 49-46 across the board.
Yeah,
I believe were the scores.
I had it 5-0.
Make no mistake. It was a clear victory, but not a close victory. I think Joanna looked pretty decent at 125. I thought she looked sharp. I just think that Valentina had more tools in her arsenal and was a little bit stronger. She mentioned to you on the post show, you know, having fought at 35, she was able to translate that strength and that power a little bit more in coming down to flyweight versus Joanna, who's building the muscle now and having to come up. There's no doubt in my mind that Joanna could compete at 25. I think the more interesting weight class for her is 115. If she's willing to do that cut again, it will, in order to fight for the title though, it will take a lot. It will take Rose being dethroned or her having to put in a lot of work there at 115.
Look at you referencing the post show.
Listen, I watch.
Live on ESPN Plus?
I watch it.
Live?
Yeah.
Wow.
Watch it live.
You know, tweet about it. Be nice to get a little plug here and there. You know, we're trying to build something.
I'm just enjoying.
You're just a lurker.
I'm a lurker.
Gunny Nelson, Thiago Santos,
huge.
Hakeem Dawodu, Nina Ansaroff, Gilbert Burns, Elias Theodoro, Brad Katona.
A lot of these Diego underdogs, Lima. By the way.
Yes.
Big night for underdogs.
Diego Fajeda, Alexander Rakic. Any other performance? There were a lot of great ones. It was interesting. Like the first four fights on Fight Pass, those were amazing.
Yeah.
All finishes. Then the next four were a little bit slow, and then the main card was solid. Any other fight or performance you want to...
It sounded like you mentioned every single one of them.
Well, I did, actually.
So,
I mentioned all the winners.
Yeah.
The Thiago Santos fight was incredible.
For
all of a sudden,
sure.
205 has some players, some new faces. Santos, Dominic Reyes, Anthony Smith.
Anthony Smith and Santos both coming up from 85. Thiago Santos holding a win over him, which is the interesting kind of thing.
But at 85.
At 85. Man, Santos is legitimate at 205. And all of a sudden there's a youth infusion. Yeah.
Amazing.
Or at least, you know, compared to the upper echelon of the division previously. I'm interested. And I think what's also interesting about all those guys at 205 is they have exciting styles. It's not just guys grinding out wins. Anthony Smith, finisher. Thiago Santos, finisher. Dominic Reyes, finisher. There's good things, I think, on the horizon for 205.
Overall, one of my favorite cards of the year.
Great card.
Up there with 228 was a fun one. And the Toronto crowd, I mean, can't say it enough. They show up to the open workouts. They show up to the media day. They show up to the press conference. They show up to the ceremonial weigh-ins when no one shows up to those anymore. They show up to the event early. They're loud. They were chanting, "Hall away." And then they had T-City. It was amazing.
Why do you think nobody shows up to the ceremonial anymore?
Because
to me, that's the most interesting.
Because it's for the hardcores, and we know the intrigue is gone. We know.
To me, the intrigue is the face-offs.
Yeah, you can
care
watch that
more
at home. before you were watching actual, like this actually mattered, how they look on the scale, how much do they weigh. Now you can just watch that at home.
From a betting perspective, the weigh-ins are the most interesting. For me, from an intrigue perspective, I love the stare downs.
I couldn't agree more.
That's where I would want to go. That's good.
There's still value in the face-off, but
I'm coming.
There's no denying the crowds are smaller.
You're right. The intrigue is gone in terms of, you know, is this weight going to matter or not? But man, nothing's, you know, proves that point more than the stare down between Max and Brian. That was incredible.
It was incredible. It really was. This weekend, again, it's like we can't catch any kind of break, but this weekend is phenomenal. Two Bellator events, Bellator making its debut in Hawaii, as we mentioned, Invicta.
Unbelievable.
With an event, Lehman Lake McFarlane getting the homecoming, UFC on Fox, the finale, Kevin Lee versus Ally Quinta, Canelo Alvarez fighting on Saturday, and friend of the program, Becky Lynch, defending her title. By the way, you know what I thought of when speaking to Becky Lynch? I realized something.
Yes.
And it was very fun having her on.
It was great. The man.
Ben Askren is the Becky Lynch of UFC.
Ben Askren is the Becky Lynch.
Ben Askren's rise to prominence and him becoming this babyface is the exact same thing that Becky Lynch has done. He's just been the truth teller, spitting truth on everyone, calling everyone out, unfiltered. It's the exact same thing. Now, I'm not saying that Ben Askren stole the gimmick, but we're actually seeing the same thing. It just so happens to be with the curly-haired guy who has a body of a 6-year-old grandma, as Kamaru Usman said. So it's the same thing. It really is. Ben Askren is the Becky Lynch of the UFC.
Definitely on social media. I'll say that.
Well, he hasn't fought yet, so I can't really gauge how popular he is. But what he's doing is exactly what she's doing.
He's calling shots there on social media.
It's always fun when someone comes out just gunslinging. Shooting, as they say. Shoot or shoot. Someone said shoot or shoot. Oh, Frankie Edgar. I wasn't expecting that from him. Okay, which fight? Which fight are we most looking forward to? Anything you want to say about this before they kick us out of here? Ally Quinta, Kevin Lee, Dan Hooker, Edson Barbosa, Bobby Green. By the way, the Fox card is fun. Dracar Close, Jared Gordon coming back, Rob Font against Sergio Pettis, Charles Oliveira, Jim Miller, Trevor Smith for Zach Cummings. What else we got? Our friend Dan Ige, Andrea Lee returning against Jessica Rose Clark. We've got the Bellator fights, Michael Chandler against Brent Primus finally. What do you want to say? Anything at all?
Let me quickly say I've been hot with my bets lately.
Okay.
Last week I had Jessica I and Gilbert Burns, both underdogs, gave those ones out, and those are winners. I'm not really loving any of the betting lines for this one, but I do. The fight I like the most is Font and Pettis. I want to see Pettis, how he looks moving up, and I think Font is a really exciting guy.
And let's just
what?
Well, Ben Askren tweeting me now.
What did he say?
At any point during the Ariel Helwani interview, did Marty Usman say he would fight me, or did he just make a lot of lame excuses?
It sounded like he said he would fight him. I think
by the end of it, we got to.
Oh, I don't think it was ambiguous. Do you? By the end, he said he's going to hurt him. What was the exact phrase he used? I'm forgetting.
Yes, flatline.
He was going to flatline him. That's right. He was going to flatline the curly-haired weirdo.
Yes.
I think that's a declarative statement.
Jake, anything you want to say for yourself back there? I mean, I feel like you're here, but you're not. You're very reclusive today.
No, I'm just doing my job.
Anything you want to say? Anything?
I'm letting you guys wax poetic.
That's it? That's all you got?
Should be a good weekend of fights.
That's what you got? That's your big input?
Hopefully Chandler gets the belt back. Looking forward to that fight.
We're openly rooting for Chandler? I'm going to have Brent Primus on the show.
I'm a fan of Chandler. What's the problem?
You're allowed to be a fan, right?
Yeah, I'm allowed to be.
You're not a journalist per se by trade?
Not by trade, no.
That's all? That's your big input after all this time? I've been building you up as some sort of MMA guru, and that's your big input?
Hoping you guys made fun of me last time about BJ Penn, so you're not really building me up.
Wow. Well, here I am trying to sort of, you know, repackage you into an insider, and you give me, I hope Michael Chandler will beat Brent Primus. That's your big...
Hey, I'm a fan. What are you going to do?
That's your big nugget.
Yep. I don't have any nuggets. That's your job.
That's all you got.
Who knows?
Anything? Becky Lynch, Ben Askren, anything at all?
What would you like me to say?
I don't know. I just wanted to know if you had something to say.
Not really, no.
Should we tell the people about our big plans or not this week?
No, you already teased it earlier, so we'll leave
we're
it
good?
At that.
Yep. All right. Is that your way of wrapping us up?
No, you kind of wrapped it up yourself.
Well, I was turning to you now for some insight.
No, this is my way of wrapping you up.
Any, you know, fond memories of the UFC on Fox era? Anything you want to say? The return of Dominic Cruz? What about Krokop Nelson 2 happening in Connecticut? Surely you have something to say about Cage Warriors 100.
You're talking to me?
Someone.
Hey, that Bellator card in February in Connecticut.
That's a good... See?
Some good fights on that one.
Of course... Jake, you know,
he saved
applauding Bellator for doing MVP daily in Connecticut.
Yeah, because it's 20 minutes away from me.
I mean, that's your big thing. Wow. Scott Van Pelt has the one big thing. That's
Jake's one big
thing. Well, that's the new thing for the post show. I've just decided. We're going to end the show every
Jake's
week
one big thing?
With Jake's one big thing. It's going to be pearls of wisdom. Like
I'm ready for Michael Chandler.
Michael Chandler. Oh, what a week. What a time to be alive, my friends. It has been fun. Thank you to Toronto, by the way. Stephen Brunt, Tim and Sid, Bob McCown, SportsCenter. I mean, I went to them all and talked to them all. Quite frankly, it's hard just being a regular citizen here.
Are you
in the
doing
United
a
States.
Mayoral bid? Is there
no,
something coming?
I forgot my green card. I almost didn't get an opportunity to leave the country. It was very scary yesterday.
Well, glad you're here.
But I made it. We had a fun day. I appreciate everyone who stopped by today. Thank you very much, New York Rick, Jake, everyone back in Bristol. We'll be back next week. Until then, bye-bye.